When I was a kid, I used to look outside the window of my elementary school classroom and stare at the cars driving down Farmersville Road, which really was the name of the two-lane road outside. It was, and it is, a road that connects the two nearest towns where I grew up to one another. And so the way I figured it when I was a kid, in order to get anywhere in the entire world, you first had to turn either left or right from Farmersville Road. And even given that, given the fact that it was the gateway to the whole entire universe, there weren't that many cars on that road, really. There were just enough to keep me occupied. And one of my clearest memories from that time in my life was watching those cars go by on that road in the middle of a school day and thinking about how awesome it must be to be a grown-up. To be free to go where you please and drive down Farmersville Road whenever you want and follow that road wherever it might take you. When I was supposed to be paying attention to my teachers, I thought a lot about what the people in those cars were up to. I imagined that every one of them was doing something cool in the middle of a Monday, like going shopping or having nice lunches and hanging out with their friends. And I thought about how life must really start. I mean, really, really start when you got a car and a job. And you could do whatever you wanted on a Monday afternoon. Just like those people in those cars, they were living, I thought. And someday, if I played my cards right, I could really live too. Fast forward 15 years, and I remember being in seminary, having technically been a grown-up and justly endowed the freedoms of a driver's license for quite some time. I remember poring over my books, eating ramen noodles for lunch, and thinking that life must really start. I mean, really, really start once I graduated. Once I found my way to a parish like this one among people like you, it was here in the churches, not there in the seminary, that people were really living. And someday, if I played my cards right, I might really live too. And I know that others have leafed through bridal magazines or studied China patterns or picked out baby bunting or daydreamed through another workday thinking for all the world that life must really start. I mean, really, really start. At that unnameable point in the future when they will get married or have a baby or finally get that long overdue divorce, or the kids will go off to college, or retirement finally comes, or the kitchen remodel is done, or that long yearned for vacation finally gets taken. Then, when this happens or that happens, when this yearning is met or that one fulfilled, then it really starts. I mean, really, really starts. Not this waiting, but that living, which we imagine that other people are doing all over the place while we here yearn for something more. The real living must start at some point. Not the getting there, but the being there. Not the journey, but the destination. And sometimes I wonder if we're all just sitting there in our classrooms, pencils in hand, ignoring the teacher while we watch the cars go by outside, and think to ourselves that everyone else, everyone but us, is on their way to something really cool while we just wait for the whole thing to start. Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Somewhere down the other side of Farmersville Road, there is freedom and life and adventure. Somewhere beyond this place there lays life and love and the beginning of all things new. Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz isn't the only one who yearns for a faraway place. far from the dust and the muck and the doldrums of her Kansas. Somewhere over the rainbow there are indeed bluebirds. Like the drivers on my country road, they can go where they please, when they please, freed from the confines of the very earth. Theirs is adventure, and theirs is freedom, and theirs is a different future, a life without constraint. Like myself in elementary school, Dorothy's just a kid, and her dreams are the dreams of childhood. In childhood, from what I remember, life almost always feels like it's waiting to start. But the truth is that yearning for a faraway place is not the unique purview of children. We all yearn for freedom. At every age and in every stage of confinement, we too yearn to break out. We too wonder what it would be like to shake off the ties that bind us to this particular kind of life and take up something wholly different, to be transformed into someone more exciting. We too wonder what lies just over the horizon, on the other side of the rainbow. And the plaintive song of a child yearning to break free is not so different from our own songs, after all. It's a part of our nature to dream of things, to envision other worlds and other days and other lives that we might live. But there is, in fact, only one life that we are living. And it just so happens that it's being played out right in front of us this very minute, and that no amount of dreaming it away can make it any less real, nor, frankly, any less beautiful. I pulled out that reading from Richard Lisher today because it reminds me of how the lives we've imagined for ourselves often don't seem to match the lives we're actually living. We are storytelling creatures. And we construct narratives about our lives, what they are and what they could be, for what we deserve out of life and what we are capable of. And the truth is that those narratives are often quite strikingly different than the days which actually stretch out before us. The baker might have dreamed of being a dancer. The dancer perhaps wishes she could paint. The lawyer sits at his desk daydreaming of chopping wood, and the construction worker wishes just once he could put his loafered feet up on a shiny desk and waste an afternoon on email. We all have plans, or at least visions of what life might be like for other people or other versions of ourselves. With our hard work and our commitment, life sometimes brings those visions to pass, and sometimes, as John Lennon said, life happens when we're busy making other plans. In our reading this morning, we saw one man's plans for his life come face to face with life's plans for him. Lisher didn't plan on a country church surrounded by dust. He felt in his bones, he knew in his soul, that he deserved to be an important man surrounded by significance and promise. What he didn't know was just how important he could be in that little place, in that life which was opening before him, to those people who needed him so badly. What he didn't know was that all the significance a person could hope for was contained in that dusty old church with its one-armed cross and its motley crew of weary congregants. What he didn't know was that life, his life, the only life he needed to live, had already started. And there was no time to wait around for a different one to swoop in and take its place. In Lisher's book, he goes on to describe the mundane miracles of life in a small rural parish, the marrying and the burying and the spiritual rebirths, great and small, the babies that turn as if by magic into gracious young men and women, the simple work of loving and being loved by decent people. Being there, in that mundane, dusty place, gave him the gift of a life he never would have been wise enough to imagine for himself. And coming to accept that gift was the key to his spiritual growth. There is much to be said for yearning for a faraway place. There's not a whole lot we can do to stop it, and it often leads us toward our goals. dreams that we dare to dream really do come true. But there is also much to be said for the life we are actually living. This one, with these people who call out to us to see miracles happening right here, right now, in this sacred, if ordinary, place. Life, after all, does not start tomorrow. We're actually in the middle of it. And if we don't seek out a way to live our dreams in this present world, we may find we spend the whole time waiting. As Unitarian Universalists, we have a theological heritage that calls us to bear witness to the sacredness of this present moment. As with most religious people, we have in the annals of our history books the late greats, the saints and seers who said it best. And one of ours, Ralph Waldo Emerson, held as a central tenet of his faith that God is working in this world, not in any other, and that the sacred is moving through our own experience, and that we'd best not ignore it, for to do so would be akin to turning our backs on the burning bush or running away from the singing of angels. Emerson biographer Robert D. Richardson described it best when he said that Emerson had an almost intolerable awareness that every morning began with infinite promise. Any book may be read, any idea thought, any action taken. Anything that has ever been possible to human beings is possible to most of us every time the clock says 6 a.m. On a day no different than the one now breaking, Shakespeare sat down to begin Hamlet. Each of us has all the time there is. Each accepts those invitations he can discern. Every day, and by that he means today, not yesterday and not tomorrow, has within itself the potential to reveal wonders. Every place, not just the grand and distant ones, has the power to be holy ground. There's a poem I love by Christina Georgina Rossetti that I know I've shared here at least a couple of times, but it's too good to keep to myself. She says, "Tread softly. All the earth is holy ground." It may be, could we look with seeing eyes, that the spot we stand on is paradise, where dead have come to life and lost been found, where faith has triumphed and martyrdom been crowned, where fools have foiled the wisdom of the wise. From this same spot the dust of saints may rise, and all the king's prisoners come to life unbound. From this spot we stand on, not that place over the rainbow or down the country road, but this place. From this place may arise every source of meaning and significance you need. From this time, there may come an invitation to live more richly, even if you never see what lies on the other side of the horizon, even if you never live out the story you've written for your life. Life might just have other plans, and as it turns out, those plans might be brilliant. You will remember, of course, at the end of the journey, when Dorothy has traveled so far as her imagination can take her, and she has lived an adventure not even the bluebirds could dream up, you'll remember at the end, there is no place like home. Time and again, I've heard new members and friends of our congregation describe this place as a religious home they never thought they could find, or a place they could finally feel at home. We say that we've come home when we arrive here to one another, and there is an implied understanding in those words that we've reached a culmination of some sort of journey. And at the end, instead of heaven, we get brew. Instead of angels, we get choir members, and instead of St. Peter at the pearly gates, we get a greeter at the front door with visitor forms. But home is not something that just happens here at our church. It's not even just something that happens in our living rooms or in the hometowns many of us have left behind and sorely miss. The home we seek and must find is the ability to be at home in our lives, in our own skin with the gifts we have been given and the days that are ours. No matter how you yearned and may yearn still to leave it, no matter where you think you ought to be or what kind of life you thought you deserved, in the end, the tapping of those ruby slippers is not for a fantasy or for a faraway place, but for this place, with all of its dust and its mundane realities, with its country churches and its distinct lack of glitter and glory. This place, your life, holy ground, from which arises meaning and truth and significance. This place, there's no place like home.